Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative news and commentary addressing the issues that concern you here on the BBS radio and television network. Today, we're going to focus on U.S. domestic political news and commentary as these relate to our ongoing struggle to save and preserve America as we have known it and defeat the globalist, communist, totalitarian worshiping group of bad actors that seek to overthrow our constitutional republic and turn us into a third world socialist hellhole and slave state. If that statement sounds apocalyptic, it should, because it reflects the true apocalypse we face if we allow ourselves to be dumbed down, duped, and controlled by the evil people around the world who, out of greed, ideological brainwashing, or other nefarious motivations, seek the utter destruction of Western civilization and with it our prosperity and precious individual freedoms. Starting off with today's video presentations is a recent post from conservative political commentator Dr. Steve Turley on his YouTube channel with his analysis and thoughts on last week's U.S. Supreme Court decision upholding a literal interpretation of the 14th Amendment's Birthright Citizenship Clause, and also upholding the right of states to allow acceptance and counting of the infamous mail-in ballots long after Election Day. Thus, at least on the surface of this ruling, giving the now communist-dominated Democratic Party a boost to its election-stealing apparatus. Turley sees an eventual constitutional amendment as the ultimate solution here, but that's not going to be easily accomplished. Obviously, and to me, the most rational immediate course of action is for more executive orders backed up with congressional legislation that remedies both the mail-in ballot fiasco and the birthright citizenship nightmare. Birthright citizenship is being taken advantage of by people from around the world to gain entrance to and influence over the U.S., including hundreds of thousands from communist China, thus giving people from that country eventual and potentially widespread influence in our elections here.
Hey gang, it's me, Dr. Steve, coming to you from the beautiful Hudson Valley in upstate New York on a very much needed vacation. As you know, we've been working really hard with international classical school movements throughout the world that's reawakening conservative Christian civilization. And so now, you know, it's time for me to get a little rest and relaxation here. But I just had to comment on the one-two gut punch that we all just got from the supposedly conservative justices Roberts and Barrett on the Supreme Court. I'm sure most of you have heard by now, as of this morning, the court has indeed struck down President Trump's executive order on birthright citizenship. And that abysmal decision followed yesterday's blow to election integrity, where the same two justices joined the three liberal idiots to allow mail-in ballots to be counted days after Election Day. So let's take each in turn. So you might recall President Trump on January 20th of 2025, his very first day back in office, he directed federal agencies through an EO not to recognize the citizenship of babies born in the United States if either parent was illegal. The administration's argument was very straightforward. The 14th Amendment says citizenship belongs to persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So it's those last six words. I mean, they're not decoration, right? All children born in the United States to parents who were not under the jurisdiction of this nation, like an ambassador or a diplomat, or like children of tribal Indians. their children are born in the United States are not recognized as United States citizens, and neither should illegal migrants who are by definition still under the jurisdiction of their own countries of origin. But somehow, some way, the two supposed conservative justices, both nominated by Republican presidents, Roberts and Barrett, have embraced the insanity of the left that's just infested modern jurisprudence, and they've ruled that children born to illegals inside the country are indeed automatically, poof, automatically U.S. citizens. Even my namesake, Jonathan Turley, the law professor, who's not a conservative, he says that this constitutional interpretation is utterly insane. Well, his exact words are, it's perfectly insane. And he thinks this is going to force us to try to ultimately pass a constitutional amendment that permanently defines the jurisdiction clause as excluding children of illegal migrants. Now, the good news is that the border is shut because of the very policies that were instituted on that very day, January 20th, 2025, the same day President Trump issued his executive order. Since that day, there has been zero illegal border crossings. Zero. That's not an exaggeration. And keep in mind, the anchor baby strategy that's tied to this birthright citizenship is officially dead. So an illegal alien parent is absolutely still subject to deportation, even if their child's a U.S. citizen. Courts have upheld that for 50 years. Having a U.S. citizen child is not the equivalent of getting a visa. A U.S. citizen child cannot petition for a parent's green card until the child turns 21. So even setting deportation aside, the anchor doesn't legally attach. If the parent is deported before the child can petition for them, a child turning 21, if the parent's deported, they have two choices. They could leave the child here with U.S.-based relatives, or they can take the child with them. Technically speaking, the child is not being deported. The parent simply chooses to bring them in their deportation. And under Trump's current enforcement posture, prosecutorial discretion, as it's been called, that's where ICE would previously deprioritize parents of citizen children like they did under the Biden administration, that's dead. That's gone. And it will be gone for the next few years. But all that said, this decision this morning, as well as the blow to election integrity yesterday, are two very painful reminders that Roberts and Barrett are not conservatives. They are not constitutional originalists like Thomas and Alito and Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh's gotten much more originalist, actually, as time's gone on. Roberts and Barrett are not originalists. They are institutionalists. That's a very important distinction to get. They are not originalists. They are institutionalists. They care more about the court's reputation than they do about fidelity to the Constitution. They care more about avoiding political controversy than deciding in favor of our constitutional republic. So when you've got the other justices in default cases running home to their judicial philosophy, either on the left or the right, Roberts and Barrett run home to stability. And that's not textualism. That's judicial timidity dressed up in constitutional robes. And that's exactly what we're going to have to fight against when a Republican president is set to nominate the next Supreme Court justice. The smell test is no longer constitutional originalism. The smell test is whether they're institutionalists, whether they're going to allow their devotion to the court's reputation overrule their supposed commitment to constitutional originalism. And we frankly saw the same thing yesterday with their blow to election integrity. And all of that forces us to ask, what do we do? What decisive actions can we take to finally resolve this judicial insanity? And that is exactly what we're about to find out. So yesterday, in a 5-4 decision, Justice Barrett, joined by Roberts and the three liberal justices, upheld a Mississippi law allowing mail-in ballots postmarked by Election Day to be received and counted up to 5 days later. 14 states, all blue states, have similar laws. And Barrett wrote that federal law specifies that a vote must be cast, but not when a ballot must be received. So therefore, states can set up their own receipt deadlines. Now, Justice Alito, who's joined by Thomas, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh, they wrote a scorching dissent, pointing out that Election Day is a specified date, not a span of multiple days. The Election Day statutes require that federal elections occur on that date. But if the collection of ballots continue for days on end afterward, like they did in Mississippi here, the election's not held until the end of that period. So there is not an election day. There are de facto election days, which contradicts the statute designating a single day for the election. That's not spin. That's the plain reading of the statute. Federal law designates the first Tuesday of November as election day, not election week, not election month, right? Congress sets the date one day, and now this 5-4 decision allows states to shred that deadline by simply calling the extended counting period something other than the election. And if it's California, you could literally be counting for months on end after the federally mandated date. Now, Roberts and Barrett are effectively saying that the federal government can set the date, but there's nothing that constitutionally mandates how state legislatures have to honor it. And the irony here is beyond oblivious, I guess, to them. When it came to birthright citizenship, a question of executive power over immigration that the federal government gives to the president, they were willing to override the president by refusing to read the text as originally intended by the framers. But when it comes to election integrity and a clear federal statute, well, suddenly, you know, it's all about supposedly what the Constitution originally mandated, and it was never the actual outworking. So you can't have it both ways. Either the court reads texts honestly and applies them, or it defers. Robert and Barrett chose deferral when it inconveniences conservatives, and activism when it inconveniences the left. That's not judicial philosophy. That's a pattern. They're institutionalists, and they see as their job the responsibility of supposedly balancing the court so that the right doesn't get too much of it wants and the left doesn't get too much of what it wants. So they're actively obstructing constitutional originalism, at least when it comes to decisions like this. So bottom line, moving forward, we now know exactly what we need to prevent in the next Supreme Court appointments. We're slowly getting rid of the Senate rhinos, and the national trajectory is clearly moving in the conservative direction. So enough of these institutionalists across the board. We need faithful, unapologetic originalists. So that's number one. Secondly, the more red the country gets, the more red states accumulate, the easier it's going to be for us to pass constitutional amendments. And that's, in the end, really what we're going to have to do to push back against the court. The left can talk about, you know, stacking them, packing the court all they want. They're losing political geography. To ratify a constitutional amendment, 38 out of the 50 states have to approve it. That's 3/4. And you actually only need 34 states to hold an Article 5 constitutional convention that bypasses Congress in the proposal of constitutional amendment. And the simple fact is Republicans are quickly controlling more and more and more state legislatures. We're getting very close. Right now, we're at 28 state legislatures that we're controlling. And it's only going to continue to grow with the voter registration crisis that the Democrats are facing. So we're just 4 or 5 states away from being able to actually call an Article 5 constitutional convention and rectify this nonsense. So I think in the end, what all of this means is that today's SCOTUS ruling on birthright citizenship is really actually a clarion call for the Article 5 movement. If the court won't read the Constitution honestly, then we, the people, can rewrite the relevant clauses. And Republicans are closer to having the state-level power to do that than at any other point in modern history. And then in the meantime, yeah, we got to push the Senate to pass the SAVE Act, which would require proof of citizenship. It would restrict mail-in ballots. It would do the job the court's telling the legislature to do. The court just told us they're not going to, you know, rewrite the statute. You have to do that. And so we should say, fine, we will rewrite it in such a way that guarantees election integrity for this way forward. But bottom line, the court failed the country. Bottom line. They put their own institutionalism in front of what's best for the nation and what's most faithful to the Constitution. So it's our job to keep going, to keep fighting, and yes, ultimately, we most certainly and will inevitably win.
Continuing with our look at the Democrats' election stealing machine, here's a recent post by Robert Gouveia from his Watching the Watchers podcast, in which he analyzes a leftist judge's striking down President Trump's recent executive order directing U.S. Postal Service to ensure that states follow federal election law by forcing them to only use mail-in ballots matching actual citizens on federal voter registration lists. The Trump administration is, of course, appealing this abominable ruling.
The Trump DOJ now appealing the blocks on his election order. We know that previously an executive order came down out of the White House and said, we're going to fix our elections finally once and for all. The executive branch has the authority to execute the laws. Those laws include proper operations of the U.S. Postal Service, and we can do things to uphold the integrity of our elections without stealing the elections from the operational control of the states. And so executive order that was handed down really had two main components to it. One was about creating citizenship lists. If the states won't do it, the federal government already knows who the citizens are and where they are because they've got the IRS, Social Security Administration, Homeland Security, all these various agencies that already have this data. And all they wanted to do was just collaborate amongst themselves to create master lists against which the states could check to validate that the people voting in our elections are actual citizens and legitimate voters. Then we had part two, which was about the Postal Service and whether or not the Postal Service would be picking up mail ballots that were from people who were not on the list. Federal Postal Service, not governing elections, of course, they govern mail. And they're not obligated or required to commit fraud or to enable fraud that is being committed by the states. They don't transport cocaine if some California resident sends it in the mail to another resident. They don't have to abide by that. So if a fraudulent ballot is being introduced, they don't have to pick it up. And if you're not on the list, they don't have to pick it up. It's the federal government branch called the U.S. Postal Service. It's a federal agency. And we saw previously that this has been a 1-2-3 punch. Multiple different judges across the country have been coming in and death by a thousand cuts, knifing this new order off at the knees. One of them was called Sparkle Supnanon, is actually a dual citizen. She's from Trinidad and Tobago. Joe Biden appointed her, born in a foreign land, and as far as we know, still maintains her residency there. So we've got a dual citizen judge who comes in, think got naturalized in 2009 and is now taking over our elections to say you can't actually validate citizenship at all because it's illegal. And she issued an order on this. This was the case of the League of Women Voters versus the Department of Homeland Security. She said you cannot make the citizenship list. You cannot allow this to happen because this threatens a sacred right to vote, I guess, for the non-citizens and for the fraudsters. Because if people are voting who should not be voting, that tramples on our right, our sacred right to vote, because our vote counts for less, or it's canceled out by a fraudulent vote, or overwhelmed by fraudulent votes. So she said, of course, that the court cannot stand idly by. Trump signed the executive order, and then a bunch of these leftist organizations sued, the League of Women Voters, which has bodies all over the country, and they are essentially, in my opinion, created to file election lawsuits, and they have done this for a long time. So they sued under the APA. It was originally a lot of this was stalled out. Other judges said, you have no claim, you have no standing, you have not made a ripe showing that there is a problem. But she came and then earlier this week granted their request. So the court vacates for the entire country the SAVE Modified Program, which was a federal database that was actually implemented previously. But you can't use this because this new capability that they're developing was created in excess of statutory authority, didn't follow the proper procedure. And so she invalidated it across the country. She, of course, is from the District of Columbia and really from Trinidad and Tobago, and now says nobody can check or validate citizenship across the board. That was one half that got taken out in D.C. The second half also got taken out by this other judge, an Obama judge who was appointed and took office back in 2014. Her name is Indira Talwani. She issued a 37-page ruling, and that also got dropped right here. So once again, California, and it's interesting because they're not suing in California, they're suing in Massachusetts, doing a little bit of forum shopping, and Missouri and the red states want this program. They say, we'd actually like to check lists. We'd actually like to validate our list against your list. That'll make our job a lot better. And so red states came in to intervene, but they don't care about that. So she dropped this one yesterday, and she said 23 states, the blues, and DC sued to stop the other half. And you can't now make changes to the Postal Service rules. And we saw the Postmaster General earlier this week said, if you're not on the list, we're not picking up your mail. And the Democrat senators flipped out. So the blues sued, the reds joined in as defendants. And she here in this 37-page opinion says, you can't do that. It's ultra-virus. It's unconstitutional. It violates the separation of powers, election clauses. This is a 10th Amendment problem. And now the Postal Service is also enjoined from making these changes. A lot of the same arguments that we've seen before. She says, you're establishing infrastructure. You're not allowed to do that. And these sections tell the Postmaster General to not pick up the mail. The rulemaking has been progressing. We've read the rules here. So she says, you can also get charged with a crime for this because you're actually facilitating voter fraud under the Trump EO, but now all of it's blown out. So only the states can govern elections, even though the Postal Service is not replacing anything the state is governing, and goes through, gives us a lecture about Congress's role in federal elections. I always love hearing about the proper role of our governance by the judges who then usurp all of the power from the presidency. It's rich. So the president's limited role in federal elections. The Constitution doesn't give him any power over elections. He's not taking it. He's just governing the mail. If we can crack this nut, they're in big trouble because they are so panicky about this. They sue in every single location they possibly can. Every time you get inching even closer to getting the list, they all freak out. You can't see it. You can't look inside. We've got federal laws that say we can inspect those things. Federal laws that say you have to maintain your list. People move. People die. We have multiple duplicate registrations. We've got people who are non-citizens who are on the list. They don't maintain them. Judicial Watch is suing over that. But every time that a new lawsuit gets filed, the whole apparatus has like an antibody response and they come racing in to stop it from happening. And some people may not be included. And the Democrats, like, look at this. They get all these declarations. They have a lawfare infrastructure that we could only dream of on our side. All these are declarations, this whole page. Barber Declaration, Brunton Declaration, Hansis, Mikulski, Wise. We got many others. Miller, Rosenberg. We've got all of them on the list saying, if you do this, I may not be allowed to vote. I'm going to be disenfranchised. And because a couple of people who can't figure out how to vote are going to be disenfranchised, nobody gets election integrity at all. And it's for them really an either or. If you have any mechanisms in place to stop fraud, then that's going to disenfranchise somebody. Therefore, you can have no mechanisms. And it's the strangest thing. You know, there's fraud in everything, literally everything. You can look up the numbers. There is fraud at high levels in mortgages. There's estimates that about 1% of mortgage applications are fraudulent or have some fraud in it. Just ask Lisa Cook and Letitia James that are major crimes, felonies to commit mortgage fraud. But it happens at a 1% level. And that's interesting because that's a pretty high rate. And just extend that and extrapolate that to elections. If you have 1% of fraud in 1 million voters, that's 10,000 votes. That's dispositive in a place like Georgia or Arizona in 2020. And I would suspect the fraud levels are much higher than that. So you can find it everywhere you look. You can find it in financial transactions. You can find high amounts of fraud in every single entity in America, except elections. There is 0% fraud, according to them. And the only thing that matters is enfranchisement. So the court has previously dismissed other complaints on prudential ripeness grounds, but I'm going to reverse myself. And accordingly, it is now ordered that the other sections are legally void. They violate separation of powers, which is so rich coming from a judge who is now doing exactly that. No, you're violating separation of powers. I'm not. I'm a federal judge. I'm upholding the Constitution. So she says, you are enjoined. You cannot do any of these things. Everybody is prohibited. And all of them listed here, including the Postmaster General, no mail allowed. And also ordered within 7 days, provide notice that your prior rules are all reversed, all canceled. So ordered by Indira Talwani, another activist judge who says, I'm not going to allow you to actually govern your country so that foreigners and other problematic voters can continue to vote. It's ridiculous. But as we saw, the DOJ is now appealing this. This one just hit the docket in the League of Women Voters case. So this one is going and attacking the one that came from Sparkle Suknanan from Tobago, who's a dual citizen, maybe with still dual loyalties, which is is why she wants a bunch of open holes in the election system. But all defendants are now notified, writes the DOJ, courtesy of Stephen Pezzi, saying that we are now appealing this to the District Court of Columbia, and we're going to continue to fight for the executive power to have fair and legitimate elections.
Our last video today is from Matt Morse TV channel on YouTube, with a recent posting by Morse discussing how the communists, despite the lie and trick of the communism is dead myth, have largely taken over the Democratic Party. You'll see Morse state that the late U.S. Senator Joseph McCarthy, who oversaw congressional hearings into communist influence in America during the Red Scare of the late 1940s and 1950s, was essentially right and correct in his observations about this situation. What Morse doesn't relate here is that McCarthy was being secretly made privy to intelligence from the FBI, which had been surveilling communists and their supporters in Hollywood and elsewhere in American society. Overall, I find Morse does a good job of summarizing the situation with today's Democratic Party.
Ladies and gentlemen, all the way back in the 1950s, there was a Republican senator by the name of Joseph McCarthy. Now, for a very long time, people called McCarthy a crazy conspiracy theorist. They called him a total nut job. And the reason why is because McCarthy was sounding the alarm against the communist infiltration of the United States of America. You see, what McCarthy said all the way back in the 1950s was this. He said the communists were infiltrating our schools, our elementary schools, our middle, our high schools, our universities. He said the communists were infiltrating our military. All of our great American institutions, he said the communists were infiltrating. But here's the thing. Even though some people called him a crazy nut job conspiracy theorist back in the 1950s and 1960s, guess what? He was right. He was right about all of it. And now, in 2026, 70 years later, everyone with a functioning brain inside of their head knows he was right, including our great President Trump. Now, as you might have heard, a couple of days ago over in New York, a series of third world anti-American communist political candidates, hate to say it, they successfully made their way through the Democrat primaries. All of these candidates were endorsed by communist New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani. And so this is really what brings us to today's massive news, because President Trump, who is very aware of this communist threat, just went absolutely scorched earth. Ladies and gentlemen, take a look at this. President Trump posted on Truth Social this morning, quote, "The communists are finally making their move. I've been waiting and preparing for this for a very long time," he says. "It's easy to be a communist. All you have to do is say, I'll give you everything for free. But that means you're taking it away from others that have earned it. Over thousands of years, that ideology has not worked out once. The game is on. I hope you enjoy watching. President Donald J. Trump." Wow. Now, folks, at this point, I'd like to take a moment to explain why I mentioned Senator Joseph McCarthy a moment ago. You see, I wasn't just giving an unrelated lesson in American history. No, it's actually very related. It's very topical. It has everything to do with this. In fact, I've got some I want you to take a look at here. Ladies and gentlemen, here's a photo of a young Donald Trump pictured with his political mentor at the time, a very long time ago. A man named Roy Cohn was his name. Now, Cohn rose to prominence after lobbying for the execution of the Rosenbergs, a husband and wife pair of communist spies. You might remember them. Cohn was on the prosecutorial team, convicting others alongside the Rosenbergs, before serving as the chief counsel for the iconic anti-communist senator, Joseph McCarthy. Cohn's mentorship of a young Donald Trump is the main story of the biographical drama, the TV show The Apprentice. You might have heard of it. The movie, it's a movie. The movie title focuses on Trump as Cohn's political apprentice, with Trump mentored under Cohn's fervent patriotism and anti-communism. The movie was praised by Trump friend Roger Stone, also depicted in the film, as uncanny for its accuracy as everything unfolded back in the day. Stone, a Cohn associate and close Trump confidant, encouraged Trump to run for the presidency as a Republican, with Cohn's anti-communism and Republicanism leading on Trump's world-changing political rise. So folks, a young Donald Trump, perhaps in his 30s, early 30s, appears to be the case, Trump was heavily mentored and influenced by one of the most outspoken anti-communist individuals, a man named Roy Cohn back in the day, who worked alongside his chief counsel for Senator Joseph McCarthy during the McCarthy era of anti-communism. Now, this is where President Trump's daughter-in-law actually chimed in. Laura Trump is her name. But first, before we get to that, and all this just continues to get even more interesting and curious as we go on here, so bear with me. Do me a favor, make sure to hit that like button. Make sure to follow, hit that like button, follow, subscribe. We're on Rumble, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Go drop a 5-star review. It helps a lot. Of course, we're on YouTube here. Ladies and gentlemen, take a listen to what Laura Trump this morning had to say about all this.
Laura, good to see you tonight. So the president said we're going to have to defeat communism again. A few years ago, the word socialism was something they ran away from. Now they're embracing it. Can communism be far away?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, we all kind of laughed, Laura, not too long ago at some of these really radical, crazy, country-ending ideas that we heard from these folks who have literally taken over the Democrat Party, these socialists. But look where we are. Look around New York City. Look out in Seattle. Look at all these primary candidates, a lot of them you just highlighted, who have really taken over the Democrat Party. But look, this is what happens when you have a void at the top, right? There's no question who's been the leader of the Republican Party. For about 11 years, it's been Donald Trump. When Joe Biden was elected president, though, this guy didn't know where he was half the time. There was zero leadership. They have been rudderless, and that left a space for these far-left radical socialists to literally take over and become the face of the party. And they tried to present themselves initially as, oh, we still like America. America is still okay. Now they're saying, Laura, we want to wipe our hands on the American flag. You are great at pointing out that it starts in our schools. This is why this president has taken education so seriously, because when you're teaching our next generation of Americans that this country is a bad place, that it's an unfair, racist place. When somebody comes in and they want to sell you the moon, sun, stars, and give you other people's money, you're going to latch onto that and you might take a bite. And that's exactly where we are right now. So no, communism probably isn't that far away. These people have been clear. They want to radically transform this country, and now they're not even hiding it anymore.
She's absolutely right. We saw a clip from none other than Stephen Miller yesterday afternoon. What did he say? It pertains to all this. He said, listen, at this point in the Democrat Party, there's two types of people. There's people that are truly and genuinely evil and anti-American to their core. They are hell-bent on destroying this republic. That's category one of Democrat today. Category two, cowards. Cowards that are sitting idly by and watching this happen. Cowards and anti-American traitors. That's the Democrat Party 2026, Stephen Miller said it yesterday. And Laura Trump, she says, listen, the reason why the Democrat Party has shifted and changed in this way, becoming more communist, really, it might just be thoroughly communist, entirely communist at this point. I've seen enough. I'd call it that. She says it's because of these cowards that have just sat there and let it happen. The party, the Democrat Party, has been hijacked. This is not the Democrat Party of 1980 or 1970. That party is gone. It's not even the Democrat Party of 2000 or 2010. That party is gone. It's a communist party now these days. Now, President Trump actually this morning, okay, well, speaking at an event, he took to the stage and he chimed in on all of this in video form earlier this morning. Take a listen to this, really exposing how much of a threat this rise in communism really is right now inside the Democrat Party. Take a listen.
And as you saw with the communists elected in New York City recently, they're communists, they're not social democrats. They want to completely destroy the traditional American way of life. Communism is very easy to sell. It destroys everything, but it's very easy. I'll be honest. I think I'd be the greatest communist in history. I give free rent. Ladies and gentlemen, from now on, you don't have to pay any rent. From now on, anybody wants a house, don't worry about it. Just pick the house you want. Everybody gets free food. Everything is free from this point forward. Everyone's going to vote for me. The problem is, after 2 or 3 years, the country is a disaster area. The country fails. They always do. It always does. So easy to sell. That first year, boy, you're the most popular. It's happening right now in New York and California. But you'll start living in squalor. You'll live in squalor. There will be no food. There will be no housing. There will be no military. There will be no law and order. There will be no nothing. There will be no nothing. You'll be a third world inhabitant in every way, and everyone will suffer or die. You'll suffer or die. This is what happens. For thousands of years, it's been happening by different names. Thousands of years. I'd be the greatest communist in history. It would be so easy. You wouldn't have to work. You could stay home. The problem is a couple of years go by, the whole place collapses. Always does. Always has.
I'll tell you something here, folks. For those of you that are aware, you know this. Back in the 1920s, 1930s, there was a group in Eastern Europe called the Bolsheviks. You've heard about them. The early Russian communists. They had a term. The term they used was useful idiot. They realized, wow, there's a lot of useful idiots that are easily manipulated. They're lied to. They are receptive to our communist propaganda. We're going to lie to them. We're going to deceive them. We're going to take advantage of these useful idiots. We're going to hijack control of the country. We're going to seize power. And then we'll be free to implement our communist devices, at which point famine and plague and death and genocide, it follows shortly thereafter. Every single time, as Trump says, every time it's been implemented or attempted, that's what happens without fail. Trump's totally right. And so what do they say? We're talking about useful idiots. They say, listen, I'm a communist. If you vote for me, I promise everybody gets a free unicorn. You get a unicorn. You get a cupcake every single day. Free houses. Everybody gets a pony. There will be, rainbows and sunshine every single day if you vote for me. I'm your communist. And some people, they say, wow, really? I get a free unicorn? I get cupcakes every single day? There's going to be rainbows and sunshine every single day if I vote for you, the communist? Okay, I'll do it. And people do it, and it happens. And it's happening right now in the Democrat Party. Seriously, they're being duped.
Once again, Trump was right. When he observed on the eve of the 2024 election, that it reflected a struggle between communism and freedom. We now know, indisputably, from works such as the book Stolen Elections, The Takedown of Democracies Worldwide by Ralph Bazzulo, available on Amazon.com, that communists from Venezuela, Cuba, China, and their supporters in other countries have been colluding with their ideological brethren here in the U.S., or at least the evidence strongly indicates that, to rig and steal our elections using electronic voting equipment here and in more than 70 countries around the world, installing their leftist dupes and lackeys, such as Joe Biden, as heads of state. Now, when I say the evidence strongly suggests that, I'm talking about bad actors in this country colluding with these people. It's indisputable that the Venezuelan National Election Commission, or at least according to the information I know, I see a lot of it coming from Ralph Pizzullo's book, and also statements by someone mentioned prominent in that book, a former CIA officer and investigator into this matter, Gary Bernson, that commission in Venezuela had some 100 software engineers or otherwise electronic engineers helping to manipulate electronic voting around the world in these elections. There is much more to be done to eliminate this web of intrigue, illegality, and treason through corrupt elections around the world. But at least now we know more about where to look and what to do to combat it. That's all for today's show. As always, we hope you found today's content of interest and value. You can watch and or listen to a podcast of today's show when it's posted shortly here on the Jim Benson Show pages at bbsradio.com/ The Jim Benson Show. and elsewhere on the internet, including x.com at jamesb50309177. Also on rumble.com and Apple Podcasts. While you're at it, if you visit my pages here at bbsradio.com, scroll down on my index page at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show and check out our related videos section. Look for us again 2 weeks from today in this same time slot with another edition of the show. And have a great rest of your day and evening.